Welcome to the Sunday night There is a Solution newcomer and returning members meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. This meeting is being recorded, so you may visit our website at oaontario.org, where you'll find this audio recording, additional podcasts, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. The link will be posted in the chat. The opinions expressed are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. Our speaker today is a compulsive overeater, a member who has at least 6 months of abstinence, has recovered through the directions in the Big Book, and maintains recovery on a daily basis. After the share, there will be time to make a comment or ask a question about the OA program or what the speaker has shared. So welcome, Cindy W., a compulsive overeater from Texas.
Everyone, I'm Cindy. I'm a compulsive overeater, and I'm super grateful to be here today. Thank you so much for having me. I've been in OA for pretty much half my life now, actually, which is crazy to think about. And I've always felt like I was kind of born a compulsive, not kind of, I really have felt that throughout my recoveries that I was born into this disease because I don't remember a time in my life when food was not the entire world in my little life. Like from a very young child, food was everything in the world to me. And I always knew that I looked at food differently than other people did. And, I think back to my childhood, and there's a lot of years that were just kind of blurred out by compulsive overeating. And one thing is sure, though, like I did not look at food the way normal people did, or what I perceived normal people to think of food as. For me, I remember things about my childhood, my mom telling me stories, because I was too young to really have memories of myself. But I remember my mom telling me that she would do everything in her power to try to get me to stop eating. And I think I was so young that I was probably like not even a toddler yet. I was just a baby, and I just wanted my food more than I wanted anything else in this world, And I don't even remember any of this happening, but I remember my mom telling me things like this, and she would tr offer me money. She would offer me things throughout my years. I was given the opportunity to, like lose a certain amount of weight and get a dollar for every pound, or things like that. When I was about 14 years old, my grandparents actually offered me $5,000 to lose weight. And this was my very first taste of powerlessness because, as a 14-year-old, many, many years ago, I mean, that was probably like $100,000 today, and I wanted money, that money more than anything you could have ever imagined. And I could not do it. And I'm not one of these dieters. I know throughout the years in OA, I've known so many people that just constantly diet, lose weight, gain it back, diet, lose weight, gain it back. For me, I could not stop eating long enough to sustain any amount of weight loss. I was not a dieter. I tried, but my idea of trying would like I'd break it by like noon. Like I needed that food to survive is how I think of it today. And I also had this feeling too, like no matter how much food there was in my household as a child, it was just never enough. Like if everyone got like three slices of something, like I would need four. If there were four available, I needed five. It was like just this insane sense of like never having enough, no matter how much there really was. And I look at my life in stages of my weight. And when I look back over my life too, I could see that like everyone in my life kind of like knew that I had a problem, but they didn't really know what it is, what it was. They didn't really know how to help me. But my mom always tried to get me in like self-esteem groups and self-help groups and, dietitians and, doctors, always trying to help me. But no one had the solution that I needed that I later found in the Big Book of AA and the rooms of Overeaters Anonymous. And I remember going to dietitians and just having this feeling of like I just was not understood, And I went to therapy when I was in college, and I remember telling the therapist, "I know exactly what to eat, I just can't do it." And she looked at me and she was like, "What do you think you should eat to lose weight?" And I told her exactly what I should eat for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And she looked at me and she said, "I've never known anybody who knew what to do like you do and just didn't do it." I am bodily and mentally different from my fellows, like it tells me in the big book, and my problem has never been self-knowledge. To this day, I can look at a plate of food, I can tell you how many calories it has, how many fat grams, how many carbs. That is not my problem. And so the food was never my problem, and the food was just my solution, to all my problems. And it helped me survive until it didn't, and it outlived its usefulness and almost destroyed my life. And I think of my life in stages of my life and like my weight, right? When I was 11 years old, I was 225 pounds. I'll never forget that. I remember being in I think first grade, and I don't really know. I don't remember, I don't really have a consciousness of what I should have weighed at that age. I just knew that I was like double what everyone else was. I remember being 100 pounds when I should have been 50. And when they used to weigh you, and I remember getting on that scale and it kind of going like that, and all the kids like laughing at me like that, and I was bullied really bad in school. Dropped out of school in seventh grade because the bullying was so bad, and went to this independent study program. And this was my first introduction to Overeaters Anonymous. And went to this independent study program. Went from, D's and F's because I couldn't concentrate in school. I was abused. I was, they would throw stuff at me. They would kick me. They would do all kinds of awful things, things that wouldn't be allowed today. But at the time, it was just not that, it was just kind of overlooked. And went to this program, immediately started getting A's and B's. I would take my home, I would do my work at home, and then go there once a week, pick up stuff, take a test. And these women, and homeschooling, was not a thing back then. Like, they tried everything to get you to go back to public school. And these ladies I met, they said, "You need to go to an Overeaters Anonymous meeting or go back to public school." And that was my first taste of OA, and I hated those women at the time as a 12-year-old, and then as an adult that later found recovery, they probably saved my life because they planted a seed. I went to one meeting. I was not ready mentally, physically to be able to accept anything this program has to offer, but I never forgot that it existed, and so I came back when I was ready. It was I was 20, about 25. I just started a diet. It was that diet became my first abstinence. And I never forget, I was swimming for exercise because that's what I would do when I would get on a diet. And suddenly the thought crossed my mind is, why don't you try Overeaters Anonymous? And now I know that was the hand of my higher power. I went to one meeting, and it was very awkward and strange and really tiny. But they told me about a newcomer meeting a few days later, and I went to that one, and I immediately felt home. And I'll never forget, the speaker at the time talked all about the fatality of the illness, and probably an average person would have been scared to death and just left and never came back. But for me, it was exactly what I needed. I remember this lady coming up to me after the meeting and was like, "Please come back next week. They're not all like this." And I loved that this meeting. I needed to know about all the devastation of this disease. By then, I was 479 pounds. I was still super young, so I was yeah, I think I was 25, and so the disease hadn't yet taken a physical toll on me, but it had, just in different ways. But later on, it would take a worse toll. But I remember laying awake at night, my heart pounding so loudly in my chest that I could barely sleep. And I remember telling someone that, and I just said it like I was talking about the weather. And he was like, "Oh, really? I don't even feel my heart at night." And I never knew that wasn't normal until that conversation. The big book talks about our life is the only normal one, and that goes for that too. That's all I knew. And I came to that meeting, that abstinence, that diet became my first abstinence. I stopped eating for a year. I have never in my life put down the food for a year. So that was the first miracle of this program that I've never experienced anything anywhere else. And I lost 130 pounds. It just flew off my body. With no effort. I mean, I had a food plan that would never work for me today. I bought all the literature. I read it by myself. I didn't get a sponsor. I went to one meeting a week. I worked the steps to the best of my ability, from someone who knew nothing about a 12-step program, for someone who had no help. They're not the same 12 steps they work today, but it was enough until it wasn't. And then I proceeded to relapse, after that. And I really believe that that was God, that was my higher power keeping me in the rooms, because I honestly, if I would have struggled from the very beginning and not had that initial success, I don't know that I would have stayed around when I relapsed, because I would have probably thought this was like all those other programs that didn't work. But I knew there was something special here, something I had never found anywhere else, And when it says it works if you work it, that is 100% true. Every time I've put down the food and worked this program like my life depended on it, I found recovery every single time. And it talks about on and there is a solution. It says the fact is that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice. We cannot bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. We are without defense against the first drink. And in Bill's story, it says, alcohol was my master. And that is how I felt. Like food was my master, whatever, like anything, like my integrity out the window, any logical anything is out the window. My standards, my morals, like I will do things that I would never imagine doing as a sober, abstinent person when I'm in the food, because nothing else matters. I have the inability to care, and it sounds crazy, but it's like I just cannot care about anything or anyone when I'm eating. And it's just like it's amazing to me. What this disease has taken from me and can continue to take from me if I allow it to. And before I knew there was a solution, I lived obliviously in that area of just like I just need my food. It doesn't matter to me. At my top weight, I was 479 pounds. I couldn't walk, couldn't breathe. Like I couldn't walk up a flight of stairs. I couldn't be a good parent to my daughter. Actually, when I got pregnant, I was in this awful marriage that I didn't even know was awful until I later got into a good relationship, because again, our life is the only normal one. Like I didn't know I was in something bad until I found something good. I don't know joy, or I can't appreciate joy without first dealing, having pain in my life. It's like I just didn't know there was any other way. Just like I thought being in the food was a good place to be. Like I used to think of that as freedom. Today, there's nothing further than the truth, nothing further from the truth. Like freedom to me is peace around food and anything that takes away or even has the remote possibility of taking away my peace and freedom needs to go. And I was, like I said, 479 pounds at my top weight. When I got pregnant with my daughter, I was a married woman, and the doctor was like, what are you gonna do? I mean, like she kind of acted like I was like a knocked up 14-year-old, and I decided that, I mean, I wasn't gonna have an abortion. Like I was a married woman and she wasn't planned, but I got used to the idea real quickly, and at first it was like a shock, and I cried, not tears of joy, but within a couple of days, like I really wanted her. And then she said, the doctor, let me tell you all the things that could go wrong with you and your daughter, and terrified me. And I walked out of there sobbing. And this disease robbed me of that moment. And this disease has robbed me of so many moments. I couldn't fit in cars. My life, my social life was like non-existent. I used to like make up stories about guys that had crushes on me and write to myself in my yearbook so people would think that I was important. It was just a very sad existence. I didn't have friends. I used to give people stuff to try and buy their friendship. I've lost jobs to this disease because it's really hard to concentrate or care when I'm deep in the food. There was one time I got lost on the bus because I was so hyped up on sugar that my eyes were blurry and I misread the bus, and I got lost for hours. Like, this is the life that I live. Me and my daughter, I've been in and out of homeless shelters. I could not go back to my daughter's dad, or I could not stop going back to my daughter's dad, no matter how much he hurt or abused us. It wasn't a physical abuse, but he would like take all his money and leave, like, and he would just leave us homeless over and over and over again. And I could not get out of that vicious cycle, until one day I did. And my life kind of fell into place with this program. And I came in these rooms, and I worked the steps to the best of my ability, and my life transformed immediately, little by little. But it was not the same transformation I know today, but it was a transformation for that moment, some kind of transformation that, and a way of living that was different. And I was able to look at the world differently, and I was able to like take actions that maybe I couldn't take, before then. And then little by little, like, it was enough, that little bit of abstinence and that little bit of recovery, working the steps without a sponsor and without anybody else, and not allowing people into my heart because I didn't know how, and that was enough until it wasn't. And then I proceeded to relapse, and I relapsed, and I relapsed over and over again in these rooms. But again, I knew something special was here, and then if I just kept at it long enough, somehow I would one day get it. I just knew it in my heart. And I just stayed, keep coming back no matter what. It works if you work it. That was my story. I've never left these rooms, but I also know why people do, and so many people have left. And I was at a podium speaking one time, and this person walked up there and said, "Every time I leave and come back, you are a constant. You are always here." And that is such a beautiful gift to hear, because it is the truth. Like, I am always here, and I will be here until my dying day, because this program has given me a life that I could not have imagined without it. And I'm so very grateful. And things, my path is my path, and I don't regret the past or wish to shut the door on it, like it says. And it takes what it takes. And because of this program, I'm alive. Because honestly, I was always abstinent. It just wasn't consecutive, So like, I had 30 days, 60 days, 90 days relapse, and then 6 months, and then a year and relapse, and then, 3 years a couple times. And then for some reason, I don't know what happened, but over 12 years ago, one day I couldn't do it anymore. I know that people leave because it is so painful to be in the food in these rooms, And I woke up one day, and it was like Bill W. Like, this has to be stopped. How did I get started again? And I think it was when I got to the point where the food was just a major gift. The food stopped working in my life, and I became desperate, like, as the drowning can be, like it talks about. And I became willing to go to any lengths to recover. And it was only at my desperation of the point of, like, it hurt more to be in these rooms and not be able to get this thing than it did to what sit with the uncomfortable feelings of whatever I was trying to cover up with the food, And I had heart palpitations, diabetes, high blood pressure, like, you name it. Like, my life was so out of control in the food. And today, this program has given me a life beyond my wildest dreams, and I can see that today. And the beauty of it all too is that it's no matter what my present circumstances. It says on page 100 of the Big Book, like, no matter what our present circumstances, and I've gone through a lot of stuff in these rooms, and no matter what, like, this program is there for me, and I believe in this book like nothing else. Like, even when, and I've had so much doubt about higher power, I've had so many questions, and so many things I don't believe. I'm not sure if I believe in that, or I doubt the existence, or whatever. But one thing I know for sure is that these 12 steps have and will continue to transform my life and all my affairs. I have absolutely no doubt about that. And I was living in California a few years ago. I want to share a little bit about my life over the past few years, because it's really, really, like, important to my recovery. And in 2023, well, first of all, like, I finally got out of that relationship with my daughter's dad, and my daughter, She's got special needs, and I've had a long, very painful, rocky relationship in life with her. And this program got me through the most difficult times. And my higher power has given me this beautiful sense of humor that I can laugh at myself, I can laugh at situations. And that has immediately helped me, helped me de-escalate situations with my daughter throughout her childhood and made me be such a better parent that I would never be able to be without this program. And about maybe 18 years ago or something, I met I through the my step work, I met a woman and fell in love with the woman. And we met off of kind of like the olden days. I feel really old when I say that. The olden days version of like a dating app or whatever. And it just turned out that we were both in OA, which is absolutely insane that we were somehow brought together like that. And we our first date, quote, was at an OA meeting. That's where we met for the first time. And we got into this relationship and we fell in love, and she was the love of my life. And she raised my daughter. We met when my daughter was 5, and her dad's been out of the picture, and he's hasn't been in her life for many years. So she took over. She basically took over like the second parent role, and we had this beautiful life together based on recovery, based on the 12 steps. You know, it was a shared thing that we had together. And in 2023, you know, my life was really beautiful. And out of the blue, she went into hospital one day and never came out. And she ended up passing away. And my life was just destroyed. I was absolutely devastated. I felt it in my gut that I can't live without this person. I don't know how to live without this person. Everything in my life was enmeshed with her. She was everything in the world to me and my daughter, and I didn't know how to survive. And along with that, a lot of money was taken from me immediately too, so I didn't know how to survive financially either. And this is not only was she like my life partner, but she was also my best friend, and she was also my program best friend, my recovery buddy, you know. And it was like from within 24-hour period, I went from like having it all to like everything being ripped away from me. And it was just so devastating. And I didn't know what I was gonna do. And I remember, and this is a miracle of this program, one of the very first thoughts I had was, I cannot get over this. At that time, I had almost 10 years of abstinence. And I've been in this program now for 26 years. And so 10 years of abstinence after not, like, I spent so much time in the disease. Like, I'm one of those people, I don't know if I'm gonna get another chance, you know. And I remember a friend of mine who lost, I used to sponsor her, but we remained friends. She lost her husband tragically, and she was even younger than me, really young, in a motorcycle crash. And I remember her telling me, you know, nobody would blame you if you ate over this. This is really big. And I remember thinking, you don't understand, my recovery in this program is my only joy left in life right now. Like, I don't know if what there would be to live for anymore if I went back in the food. And that is truly how I felt. And that is like such a gift. And you know what I could have done though is I could have hid in the house, disconnected my phone, and just like shut the world out and ate myself into oblivion, you know. And it talks about in A Vision for You on page 152, it says, I know I must get along without liquor, but how can I have you a sufficient substitute? Yes, there is a substitute, and it is vastly more than that. It is a fellowship in Alcoholics Anonymous. There you will find release from care, boredom, and worry. Your imagination will be fire. Life will mean something at last. The most satisfactory years of your existence lie ahead. And that's what this program gives me, is like purpose and joy and meaning. And I knew that I could not lose that. And then also on page 450, one of my very favorite things, it says, this is a story called He Lived Only to Drink. And it says, I realized that I had to separate my sobriety from everything else that was going on in my life. No matter what happened or didn't happen, I couldn't drink. In fact, none of these things that I was going through had anything to do with my sobriety. The tides of life flow endlessly for better or worse, both good and bad, and I cannot allow my sobriety to become dependent on these ups and downs of living. Sobriety must live a life of its own. And I just knew I couldn't drink, but I told somebody too, like, I know that compulsive eating is a slow killing disease. I have no doubt I will die from this disease, but it's fair. I know also I'm not going to gain 300 pounds by next Tuesday, and I don't want to live like that. And the thing is too, like, with when this all happened, I just knew that I couldn't eat. I just knew. And when I think about, like, there's no, like, I wasn't sure I wanted to live anymore. Like, I didn't want to kill myself, but I just didn't know that there was anything worth living for or any purpose left. So even today, I don't know how I cared enough about my recovery when I cared about nothing else. But that's the hand of my higher power. And I look at it as like credits and deposits, you know? Like, I spent years putting deposits into my spiritual bank account, going to meetings, doing the steps, calling my sponsor, or calling other members, all these things that I did to enrich my spiritual life. And then one day I was like, I can't do this anymore. I don't know what to do. Like, I need to make a withdrawal. And there were sometimes many days, weeks, months even, that I did not work a very good program, but I was still safe and protected. I remember going to that hospital, and my one prayer for the day would be like, okay, God. And I believe God knows my heart. Like, okay, walk with me, you know, help me. And I will tell you, my sponsor, who lived in Georgia and I live in California, flew out to see me the weekend my partner passed away. We went to an OA convention. I went up there to the podium and I shared with anyone who would listen. People surrounded me with love. People gave me so much money. They did like a GoFundMe. And I'm not kidding. I'm running out of time, but I'm not kidding when I tell you all that people paid my rent and my car and all my bills for that month when my partner was in the hospital and I could go see her and I took off time from work. And that would have never happened without the beautiful, amazing people in this program who carried me. And it just blows my mind to think about people, strangers that I've never met before, walked up to me and held me as I sobbed. And that is the most beautiful thing ever. I got this job opportunity shortly after this happened. I knew I couldn't stay in California on my income, and my job relocated me to Texas. Everything I've touched here has turned to gold. I will tell you guys, I'm not a church person. I found the most perfect church that's like nothing I've ever experienced in my life, completely thrown in my lap from higher power. I can't even describe how miraculous this was, just everything that transpired. I went to three in-person meetings because I'm like, that first week, because I'm like, I have to find my people. I found a home, most amazing group of women I've ever known. Everything about this place and how it's transpired. The homeless girl bought a house, like miracle after miracle after miracle. It just blows my mind. And I was able to remain abstinent through it all. And I also believe, and it talks about in the big book, we need to find God will help you to create the fellowship you crave. And I created the fellowship that I crave. And, you know, for the past 3 years, I've been like, I don't want anything to do with anybody ever again. As far as like dating, I will never find somebody. I want n absolutely nothing to do with relationships. You know, she was it for me. She was the love of my life. That's all. Well, God had other plans, right? Something else happened recently, very recently. Well, it's been in process for a while, but out in Dallas, they wanted to do our Texas State Convention, and I offered to help chair it. So a friend of mine, me and a friend, were co-chairs for this convention. Just another like divine intervention, this like the most amazing set of circumstances I could ever describe to you. I was the opening speaker only because we had a last minute cancellation. In the meantime, there's somebody in the audience that is completely mesmerized by me but doesn't know why. And then through a set of circumstances that led us to like be at the exact right place at the exact right time. She happened to be from the area, but now lives in another area, and we have mutual friends, and we got invited to a mutual friend's hotel room to watch a show on Saturday night. And me and her just like flopped kind of in a bed together, and there's like a bunch of people there too, and we just like start talking for like hours, and I felt like I've known her for my entire life, and we just thought we were like besties, right? Well, later on we make outreach calls to each other, and we figure out that there's something more between us, and long story short, like I'm completely in love with this woman that I met from an OA convention that I shouldn't have even been at, and she is from another area, and she has not been back to Dallas, and it is like the most, like my walls have been so closed down for so many years. Like I literally thought that part of my life was dead, and I believe that no one in the world could have broken through my walls but this person, and I'm considering moving to Seattle to be with her. She's actually at my house right now visiting me, and we just have the most beautiful relationship again based on these 12 steps. And when I am open, when I allow myself to be open to whatever it is, to recovery, to hope, to possibilities, to love again, like God just makes things possible. And this program, like everything in my life today, if I wasn't absent, I would lose it all. And abstinence makes everything possible, and recovery just it, thank you. I'm gonna just wrap up. Like this recovery thing, like I could not imagine life without living in these 12 steps and having relationships with people, whether it's partnerships, romantic relationships, children, parents, coworkers, whatever, friends, like being in this program and living my life through the spiritual principles of this program, like I can't even imagine a better way of living. And no matter what happens in life, nothing is worth picking up over, because I can't even imagine getting through one day being in the food, but I can get through anything, walking with my higher power and trying to live through these principles. And I'm grateful beyond words to have this life today that I would never have without OA and the 12 steps. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you so much, Cindy. Thank you for your share.